Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Sports Summit podcast here on Shooting the Sports Ish. We have a brand new episode for you today. But first, we sadly start off with the passing of a legend in college football. So we're going to start off with this. Coach, this is going to be more directed to you.
Must be an elderly fellow.
Well, Chris and I would have known Schnellenberger sort of from his time at FAU. Right. Because he was there till 2011. So Chris and I would sort of know him from that because we just live in Florida and we follow Florida teams. So we know them. But he's most notable in our generation for anything that ESPN has ever put out about the U. It started with Schnellenberger. Unfortunately, he was there 10 years before Chris and I were even thought of. So right. This kind of falls into your era. You came up as a player, and then you were into coaching by that time, or at least working your way into it.
Oh, I was in it already.
Yeah. What was it about Schnellenberger at that time? And speak on that both as a fan and a coach as well.
Schnellenberger is a brilliant man. He's a highly intelligent man, not just in football. He's well-rounded. And this guy knew how to build a program. He knew how to appeal to young people, and he could recruit his behind off, because I played football in Northern Virginia, in the largest high school in Virginia back then anyway. And recruiting for Miami was a Southern thing. But when Howard Schnellenberger came in, he made it regional, East Coast. Because he came and recruited a kid who played with me. Actually, he took two kids who played with me. So he really opened up the recruiting base for Miami. He didn't say, okay, I'm going to try to. Back then, you owned your state, pretty much. You owned your region. But to expand and go nationally, as it were, Notre Dame, USC were the only ones who did it. UCLA in basketball. So Howard really showed that you could recruit regionally. You could go out and find the best athletes in the United States and bring them to a private college. Miami, most folks don't know. Miami is a private school, and it's expensive. Mm-hmm. Go out and get some of the best athletes, but you've got to have a fairly good acumen to go there then, as far as, you know, academics is concerned. Academics seems to have waned a little bit during all those championship years, but nonetheless, they still have very solid academics at Miami. But he was a genius. He was a master motivator. He came into Miami and built them to what they became. He won one national title with it. He turned over the reins and they just kept rolling because they continued with his blueprint. He goes to Louisville. He puts Louisville on the map, rebuilds their program. He goes to FAU, tells FAU, I'm not leaving here until I get a stadium on this campus. And he did just that. He coached at Oklahoma. The man, a brilliant mind overall, a brilliant football mind, and could really, really recruit, as well as being a people's person. My buddies who played for him, Tim Flanagan played for him, Greg Brown played for him, love him. Absolutely love the man. And I know that his passing this week has hit them hard.
I'm going to put you on the spot because you didn't really know this was coming, but it's more fun when we don't talk about things.
Sure.
Was there, and you said that you were into coaching at this point and everybody knew Schnellenberger. Was there a thing from a coaching perspective that you took from him? Maybe not so much as the recruiting or anything, but something that he did that would catch your eye as a coach.
To understand that being intellectual in all facets and in life made you a better coach, not just brilliant in coaching, because you have to deal with people. You have to deal with entities. You have to deal with school administrations. You have to deal with families. Being a well-rounded human being and very intelligent, articulate, well-spoken, and prepared that is one of the big things I took from him in a coaching aspect outside of his prowess in football and recruiting. Just the fact of being a intelligent, well-rounded person is going to help you in that as well, within your preparation and your execution of everything.
Yeah, it was a tough one for everybody. It kind of hit us all. I mean, obviously, it's going to hit people differently. It's going to hit more people harder, but everybody definitely saddened to hear Howard Schnellenberger, you know, over the weekend, 87 years old, passes away. Is it safe to end on the phrase that there is no the U without Howard Schnellenberger?
There, yes, it's 100% accurate. There is no this without Howard. None. Yeah. I mean, it's running a mill football.
When you watch the 30 for 30, they said, you know, when he came here, he wasn't afraid to go to the inner cities and go to Immokalee and find the athletes that, you know, started the U pipeline, the kids from Immokalee, the sugarcane fields, all those kids. He was the first one who did it. So without him, there is no U.
He said that, you know, not only am I going to own my region, my zip code, I'm going to own my recruiting war and however far that extends. And he extended it. He extended it up into New York. And when he came to us, I was like, ooh, Howard Schnellenberger's in Virginia? Yeah. He really extended that area.
Yeah, he's going to be – I mean, he's going to be a coach that obviously is going to be put on a lot of pedestals in the grand scheme of college football and very well should be. A little bit different down here, though, especially in the Miami area and the Florida area where we are. The pedestal's a little bit higher for him up here just because we got to see – well, not we, but a lot of people got to see firsthand what he did with a program that still carries the swag that he started almost, you know, 40-something years ago.
But then, too, maybe because the University of Miami was so pervasive, as good as they were, that everybody knew that, you need to go back and analyze, actually, what he did at Louisville. Louisville is a basketball school. They were never a football school until Howard. Mm-hmm. FAU, they were not a football school because they didn't have a football team until Howard. The man builds from the ground up every program he touches, and he succeeds. It's not just national titles. If he starts with rocks, he builds it into a nice gem. If he starts with a gem, he perfects it into a diamond. The man is incredible with coaching, with people, and with the entities that surround college football.
And it's good to see that it's named Howard Schnellenberger Field, the FAU Field, and it goes by the house that Howard built. Because I was going to say, if they haven't named something after him there, it's first off, it's a travesty that if they didn't already, but they definitely should now. But they already have, so that's good.
Yeah,
and you know when somebody walks into a university and says, "I'm not leaving here until I have an on-campus facility," and stands by it, doesn't happen.
No, doesn't happen.
I'd imagine he will be a coach in rarefied air of most likely having something on the FAU, Louisville, and Miami campus that will ultimately be named for him or built and named after him. And it's you don't get that with a lot of coaches. You can probably count them on one hand, maybe two. So,
well, here's how influential he is to me. I have autographed pictures of two collegiate coaches. One is my high school coach who left and went to Marshall, Bob Pruitt, and the other, Howard Schnellenberger. I wrote him a letter. I told him how proud I was of what he was doing. Thanks for coming to Virginia and taking our kids. You got two great folks in there, and I really appreciate what you're doing, and you have made me really want to get into coaching. And do you know the first one I got back was from him? Just like that. I got it back from him in a week.
Wow.
And it wasn't anybody else writing. It was his writing to me because it was personalized. Chris, thank you for the kind words, blah, blah, blah.
That's awesome. I love that.
Great guy.
I wanted to start us out with this because, I mean, Chris and I got to live through the fun times of the U. And the explosion of it, and Coach, you got to sit through the creation of it, really. I mean, we have from start to finish the build of the U in Miami between the three of us here. So I thought it wouldn't be right if we didn't start by showing a little love to Coach Howard. And unfortunately, he passed away this weekend at 87, but a guy that will will not soon be forgotten in the football worlds for sure.
No, not be forgotten in this world, period. He's had his influence on a lot of young men.
Absolutely. So with that, we are, we're going to get into the task at hand for today. Coach, what's first up?
First up is going to be, we're going to look at the results of UFC 260 that transpired this weekend. And gentlemen, we have a new heavyweight champion.
We do. Is it weird for anybody else that these UFC cards just kind of sneak up on you all of a sudden now? Because it's not a big crowd. There's not a lot of promotion. I don't know about a lot. I don't know if that's the right word, but these last two UFC cards have just kind of snuck up on me. I kind of almost forgot they were happening until like that Thursday.
I think it's changed with the ESPN Plus era. Like, you don't have – I feel like you don't have the – because you don't need to have the huge build for it now, because if you watch ESPN or if you're on social media, you're hearing about it all the time. But I feel like – I don't know. It could just be me, but I feel like the divisions are so much deeper now that you're almost spoiled for talent when it comes to cards. So, like, I looked at this card and went, there's two fights I want to see on it. Whereas, because I'm so used to now saying, oh, we have three title fights and then the undercard stacked and this. So you kind of overlook. I think it's more of an overlook as to the card itself. I mean, but the card was good. It was a very good card. So
yeah, the only thing that hurts me with this card is this is more personal, but professional as well. Jumping out of the title picture there for the heavyweight championship, Tyron Woodley used to be the man who was feared in UFC. Is it safe to say that his career is now pretty much over, as he has gone 0-4 in his last four fights?
Yeah. He's almost 40. This was his last fight on his deal. He's been submitted for the first time in his career. He's 0, like you said, and he's been handily beat in the last four fights. He's had shoulder problems. He's had knee problems. Even his last two fights as champ, they weren't great. One of them was boring as all out, and then the other one was, I think it was roughly the same. I can't remember who he was fighting in the last one, but I know one of them, he was getting booed out of the building because it was so boring. He's very good at color commentating. He's a very good teacher of the game. He needs to stick with potential coaching and commentating, because I think he's done.
Cam, you think he's finished?
I think so too, and it's tough because, like you said, Coach, at a point in his life, he was the guy at the thing that he did. You know, he was the thing that you had to get through, and to get to that point in your life, very few people will ever see. Right. And to be able to recognize that you're no longer there and walk away is probably a very hard thing to have to do. Is he on the other side of the bell curve? Sure. Yeah. He's on the come down. You know, you guys have said it with the stats and everything. I think he's going to be an incredible, as Chris said it, color commentator, sideline outside the cage, in the studio doing analyst work, being a coach. I don't know if, you know, running a school, helping run a camp, you know, whatever that may look like for him. There, you know, he's going to be in the world of UFC for a long time, as long as he wants to be. I think it's going to be outside the cage, though. This had been a long time coming for him, and this was kind of the roughest look for him. Because there's a thing of, like, you can get booed during a match because it was boring, but when you walk in and in, you know, 4 minutes you're submitted, and you've never taken a submission before, and you ever look like this, and it's the last deal of the fight, or it's the last fight of your deal. Really tough.
I will say, however, he did look more aggressive and better in this fight than he did his past three. Even though he got submitted, he looked more aggressive. He looked like a 70% of his former self.
Yeah. I don't know if that's going to get that done in the welterweight division, though.
No,
sure won't. Yeah. To be, like you said, once feared and now to be 0-4 and look as poorly as he has is pretty devastating to me. I thought he was going to hang on to a championship for a while. He had it there for a bit, but then he fell off the deep end quickly. And it's a shame because he's a phenomenal athlete. But again, on the other side of 40, there's one thing that has never, ever lost and never will. and that's time. Time always wins.
Yep. Absolutely.
We also had Sean O'Malley, whoo, whooping some hind parts on Thomas Alameda. Is it Meda?
Yeah.
Alameda.
Beat the tar out of him. So, O'Malley is looking good.
So I think a lot of people really like Sean O'Malley, and I think that they should, because this is a guy that is very aware of marketing in an individual sport, right? You look at his YouTube channel, it's building, you know, the videos that he cuts, the behind the scenes, the in the life of look that he has. He comes on and does live Q&As with people as he sits on a gigantic throne with his dog. Like, he understands how to market himself in an individual world, or the world that he lives in anyways. Everybody wants to make him the next Connor. I don't want to make him the next Connor. I don't want to put him in that category, but this is going to be the next guy that they're going to have to deal with at the bantamweight level. This gets him to 13-1. The one loss that he took, he actually didn't lose. He broke a bone. And throwing a kick, I believe he threw a kick and broke a bone in his foot. And
yeah, against Chito Vera.
Yeah, yeah. Couldn't stand, couldn't fight, eventually lost that fight because he couldn't move. So you look at it and you go, okay, he's got one loss, but it wasn't kind of an even playing field one loss. I believe this was his first fight back, correct?
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to do what he did to Almeida, he finished him once and walked away. And it wasn't a finish. And then he finished him again and walked away. And then it wasn't a finish. And then he just cocked that arm back as far about as he possibly could and connected right on the chin.
You know, he says, well, if you're not going to protect him, it's my job to put him out.
Yep. But that's the thing, too. And that goes back to, you know, that goes back to what they all say. Like, our goal is to hit until the referee gets there. And I'm going to swing until somebody takes me off of him.
And I've got to admit, I like the way the UFC officiating is done. I don't think that there have been many times that I could look at it and go, oh, my God, why you haven't stepped in yet? There have been only a couple. But all in all, UFC officiating is very good. Herb Dean is fantastic. There are a couple new up-and-comer guys that are seeing more and more championship bouts that are doing a very good job. I don't see it too often where I get angry that it wasn't stopped in time.
Mm.
Yeah. All right, so back to the new champion. Guys, this I'm not going to say that it surprised me that it occurred. I'm going to say it surprised me in the fashion in which it occurred.
No. Nah. It was only a matter of time, and I understand what you're saying. But Stipe in this situation is Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather at the end of his career caught Canelo Alvarez before Canelo was Canelo. Mm-hmm. If he fought the Canelo of today, Floyd would have got his ass handed to him.
This is kind of like a Floyd Mike Tyson situation in this fight. You've got somebody who came at him to maul him, and Stipe, who was like Floyd, just didn't work out.
Yeah, but Stipe caught Francis when Francis was raw talent.
Yep.
Francis was... You know, the knockout king who I think Dana pushed too quickly, too fast, because we all wanted it. Like, he was like, you know, he's knocking people out left and right. He's got a good resume. F it. Let's throw him to Stipe. And Francis wasn't as conditioned. He was
conditioning.
Still living in France. Yep. His coaches weren't the best. Ever since he's changed coaches, he has, you know, he's working with Kamaru Usman when it comes to wrestling. He's got a good wrestling coach. He's got a good striking coach. He's got a kickboxing coach. He's got a live-in hole, or he's got a chef that is with him 24/7, pretty much. This was just a matter of time when it started to be chiseled and sculpted into what could be with Francis. It's going to be, I mean, he made Stipe, arguably the greatest heavyweight of all time, look like a child in there with him. This looked like two men in different weight classes. Francis came in at 265. Stipe came, they said, at 235. If he was 235, I don't see it. He carries it well. The power, the speed, you saw head kicks, you saw takedowns. This is the Francis Ngannou that everyone knew was there. It was just a matter of time for it to happen. And now that he's the heavyweight champ, I think the moniker baddest man on the planet sometimes doesn't fit the heavyweight champ. This one it does.
You know, and when that moniker starts getting thrown around, that's when it becomes problematic, it seems, for the heavyweight champ, because they had just started calling Stipe that. And he kind of dismissed it a little bit, as, you know, as well you should, especially when you've got a Francis Ngannou floating around out there. But then they, the baddest man on the planet, and then here comes Ngannou and just tears him up. The man is chiseled at 265. I remember the statistics in my head. I don't even have to look them up. He threw 38 significant strikes of the 38 hitting strikes. Out of that, 36 were significant. Stipe was 12 of 12 significant strikes, all of them significant. But one takedown in the match in Ngannou's, and it was total domination from start to finish.
Yeah, this is what UFC needs right now. They need, yes, Stipe was great, but Stipe was the hybrid heavyweight. He was quick, he could wrestle, he could do it all. This is what the UFC has been missing for a while, is that main event heavyweight champ that will rip your head off.
Okay, so is this analogous to in boxing when Evander Holyfield was champion and Tyson took the championship? Is it that type of monster taking it from the svelte technician?
Yes, that would be a good, you know, comparison. And it's good because Francis is a, you know, he's a nice, lovable guy. He's not, yes, he's a monster in the cage, but when you watch anything with him, he seems like a huge teddy bear.
Even after the fight, he was cordial.
He said when he retires, he wants to work with kids. He wants to set up a foundation back in Cameroon. He's just the nicest dude in the world. He's a good poster boy to have. And I like, you know, after the fight, John Jones said, "Show me the money." And it's Francis instantly was, "No, I'm the champ now. You show me the money. You wait on my terms." Yeah. And that's what he should be, because right now he is the guy. He should be the one calling the shots.
Did you see the stills of this man? He is 265 pounds of nothing but power and muscle.
He's a freak.
He is.
He's a genetic freak.
And his conditioning, that was the big thing I saw. His conditioning was so much better this fight. The first fight, he was gassed after a minute and a half, and you could see it. Not now. This guy has got his conditioning down.
And like I said, he was still living in France at that time. He wasn't, I think he was starting to believe in his hype a little too much. He wasn't working as much as he should have. But I think he's living outside on the outskirts of Vegas now. He's in the Performance Institute 24/7, Dana was saying. Mm-hmm. He's working on his craft. Even the Embedded series, I knew from like Monday of last week he was winning, because you watch the Embedded series, he's doing a warning workout, an evening workout. Every time they cut to him, he's in the gym. And then when they cut to Stipe, he's playing cards, eating food, chilling with his family and his coaches. And you could kind of see watching that, you're like, Stipe, I think, is taking this one a little too easy.
So you think, Cam, you think we got a heavyweight champion that sticks around for a while?
I mean, it's hard to say no with that. You know, also props to Africa right now. Mm-hmm. Three belt holders and three very good fighters. Israel Adesanya, Kamaru Usman, and Francis Ngannou, all holding belts for the country of Africa.
I'm telling you, the African continent could always run and fight. Their athletes can run and fight.
Yes, they can. And it's awesome to see the video of Francis Ngannou's home city.
Cameroon.
Up at 4:30 a.m., 5 a.m., watching his fight, just losing their minds when he won. Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, listen, if you don't get joy out of seeing those videos, then you don't have a pulse.
Yeah.
But for Ngannou, I mean, nobody's really there. You know, the last guy to fight Stipe, what really was Cormier. Cormier is done. Stipe will probably come back for a rematch.
I was going to say, is there a Miocic in Ngannou 3?
I think that, you know, it's 1-1 now, right? So you have to have the third. You have to have the trilogy. Yeah. I will still take Ngannou in that trilogy. And I think really the next big fight for Ngannou is Jones. I don't think there's anywhere else for him to go.
There's three logical matches for him next. Derek Lewis in his last outing looked phenomenal.
He's
up there when it comes to power rankings. Is that a big money fight? Yes and no. For your, you know, for UFC fans, you'll want to tune in because Derek Lewis and Ngannou, two knockout artists facing off. Incredible. You got your Miocic rematch, which, you know, he's going to say, yes, I won it because, I lost it. It's 1-1. I deserve my third. But from the money standpoint, it's John Jones. Jones moves up to heavyweight. He relinquishes the light heavyweight title because he's done everything he has done there. He's thrown on like 35, 40 pounds of pure muscle. If you follow him on any of your social medias, he doesn't look like he's lost a step. He's got the quickness, but now he has power, which is just crazy to think. And it will be the toughest fighter Francis will probably ever face because John Jones, in my opinion, is the greatest fighter to ever step foot in an octagon. He can get it done however he wants it, whenever he wants it. And it's going to be interesting on both parts. Francis, first offense in a probably will be the biggest fight in UFC history, more so than Conor Khabib, because you have people who want to see the fight and then want to see John lose. And then you're also going to have John coming up, and he's known to slack when it comes to fights. You know, you look back at the first Gustafson fight, didn't train hard, probably was out partying too much, almost lost. He's had a couple of his last two fights at light heavyweight, probably could have gone the other way. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think that's the fight you do. The money's got to be there, though. You can't lowball Jones and Ngannou for this. You got to pay them big because
that money's going to be there.
With the revenue that's coming in, you have to pay them big.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a Jerry's World fight.
Yeah, that's one of the fights you want to have at Jerry World. You want to have in Vegas or New York. You want to have one of those three.
Yeah, absolutely. That won't be a Fight Island fight.
No. So it's going to be interesting because they're having their first full capacity fight in Jacksonville coming up soon. First card, it's going to be main evented by Usman and Masvidal. It's going to be interesting. More and more states are cutting back on restrictions. I think it's still way too early to have a full capacity fight, in my opinion, but who am I to be talking about that? But yeah, this is one of those that you wait for a sold out MSG, a sold out Jerry World, a sold out, you know, UFC in Vegas. You want the hype, the buzz to be there. It needs to take over the city it's in. And if that's, 6 months, wait for it. Have him fight Miocic again. Have him fight Lewis again.
Yeah. Well, the fastest way to get there is Texas. Yeah. I mean, of the three states you listed, the fastest way to get there is Texas.
Mm-hmm. You want to hear a pretty significant stat since the last time these two fought?
Who's these two?
These two, Miocic and Ngannou.
Okay.
Ngannou, let's go to Miocic first. He has taken 311 significant shots. 311. You know how many Francis Ngannou has taken?
Probably 82. Four.
82.
10% of that. 31.
30.
311, 31.
And
there's a lot of tread on them tires.
And we talk about, Francis Ngannou. When he fought Stipe, it was in 2018. Mm-hmm. But you look at Ngannou's resume. He's fought Miocic and won. He's beat Rosenstruck. He's beat Junior Dos Santos. He's beat Velasquez. He's beat Curtis Blaydes. He lost to Derek Lewis on a decision after the fight of Stipe. That's when he changed coaches. But then he beat Overeem. He beat Arlovsky. He's beaten Anthony Hamilton. He's beaten Curtis Blaydes. Like, he's beaten of who's who when it comes to...
He hasn't avoided a single person. That's correct.
He's fought everybody. So, I think, if you want to wait for the Jones fight to be able to pack a stadium, you give him Derek Lewis again, and then you give him Stipe, and then you get to Jones. Because, honestly, the only person I think who can beat Ngannou right now is Ngannou. It depends on how he trains. And Jones, outside of that, it's John Jones. That's the only person I think will give him the best fight.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, guys, let's move over to the hardwood. We have got the NBA deadline upon us. Gentlemen, as the hardwood experts, what do you think is the most significant rumor that's going on? Because I got one for you to see if y'all have heard. And what do you think is the most significant development that has occurred and or will occur?
Well, as far as the trade deadline and how it happened and how it came and went, I think obviously, you know, Blake Griffin being bought out and going to Brooklyn, I'll let Chris touch on one that's a little bit closer to home for him. I think for me, probably the most significant one of these moves, I really like Aaron Gordon to Denver. I thought that was a fantastic move by Denver to get him. They didn't give up much in the terms of keeping together a team that could go win a title or at least could go compete for a Western Conference Finals. I think Aaron Gordon is really going to fit in around Jokic as the four and what Jokic wants to do and how he wants to run the floor and spread the floor. I think Aaron Gordon is perfect for what they're trying to do right now. And I actually love that move that Denver made. And I think it's going to pay off in a sense of making them deeper at a Western Conference Finals run, which they're looking to have this year.
Yeah, that was a big move. And, you know, you look on the other side of that coin, Orlando, they trade Aaron Gordon. They get back Gary Harris, RJ Hampton in a first. Mm-hmm. That's not a bad haul. And then when they traded Nikola Vucevic, which I also think is a massive move, sending him to Chicago, pairing him up with Zach LaVine. If I'm not mistaken, the Magic get Otto Porter, good wing, solid wing, Wendell Carter Jr., young center, who you can pair next to Mo Bamba, which I desperately want to see those two playing together, and then two first-round picks.
Yeah.
That, I mean, yes, Orlando blew it up, but they got back good capital for what they did.
Oh, for sure.
Evan Fournier also went to the Celtics.
Yeah, he went to Boston, which
I kind of like that move.
It's a good move if Boston was playing to their capabilities. Yeah. But right now with how Boston's playing, it's going to go under the radar because if Boston was the number one seed in the East, you go, all right, that gives them some breathing room against everybody else.
Yeah.
I do think it's a good move. Evan Fournier is one of the more underrated, you know, players in the league because he was playing in Orlando. He's a guy that, you know, all the big money, you know, the big market, big money teams, the title contenders were looking at. So it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out for Boston because they have problems elsewhere on that team. But I think another thing that coming out of the trade deadline day is this was one of the worst trade deadline days we've had in a while. A lot of buzz, not a lot of big moves. You know, you heard Lonzo potentially to the Bulls and then the Knicks, and you're like, oh, you know, I want to see Lonzo on the Bulls with Zach LaVine and Vooch. Hell yeah, nothing happened. I mean, Kyle Lowry, since day one of this season, you're here, it's going to get traded at the deadline. Nothing happening. Yep. They were asking for way too much, in my opinion, Toronto. You're you're down bad right now in the East, and that's saying something because the East is the weaker conference. You're asking for two ones and two young players for Kyle Lowry. I understand he's your franchise player, but that's too much for someone his caliber. Yeah. I know they were looking to get Hero and Duncan Robinson from the Heat for him. That's stupid, and I'm glad Miami didn't do that. And then Miami turns around and goes, all right, we can't get Lowry. We'll go out and get Victor Oladipo for Avery Bradley, Kelly Olynyk, and a draft swap. Once again, Pat Riley working his magic, putting VO on a team that's already defensively very sound. I think everybody needs to pump the brakes with Tyler Hero because coming out of the bubble, people were making him seem like he was going to be the next Ray Allen. You overhyped him, as the smart people said at the time. He's not there yet. Can he be there? Potentially. I think this move, you put Tyler Hero, and this could be an unpopular opinion, I think you move him to the bench. You make him your sixth man, coming off the bench, giving you that spark. And then to be able to start, you know, Jimmy Butler and Victor Oladipo together at the 2 and 3 defensively, I don't think you're going to find a better pair of wing defenders out there.
All right, down in the future, though, guys.
Oh, yeah.
With the way that the Magic have set themselves up, guys, are they potentially the team of the future? Because here's what they've done. They got Gary Harris, RJ Hampton, Otto Porter, and Wendell Carter Jr. 2021, 2023, 2025 first round draft picks, and 2 second round picks. And they've got a good young nucleus to build around. Carter Hampton, Markelle Fultz, Jonathan Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
They are young. They have draft capital. They're set. Their total rebuild is now in effect.
Yeah,
and they're going to be good for years to come if they do this right.
I think they did almost in one trade deadline what the Knicks have tried to do in the last three drafts, which, mm-hmm. by the way, the Knicks have been very successful at, and they should be commended. And, oh, by the way, who knew when you gave a guy like Tom Thibodeau a bunch of young, hungry athletes that he could put them out on a court and go win games? Yeah. Who knew that could happen? I really enjoy what Orlando did. You know, they were in full blow-up mode, so it's not like they were in the middle of competing and then this came out of nowhere. Everybody in Orlando and every other city in America that follows the NBA knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. This came as a surprise to nobody. And as Chris pointed out, what they got back in return is a heck of a start in the rebuild process. The question is, can Steve Clifford, with a young, hungry group of players, do what Tibbs is being able to do right now in New York? I think that's his most logical comparison. I don't know if it's right to compare them, but I think that's the most logical comparison that you can come up with right now for Clifford.
Yeah, this is it's going to be a slow burn for Orlando. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Isaac needs to stay healthy. That's the biggest question mark on him. Can he stay healthy each year? Markelle Fultz was having a great year this year, and then got hurt. Cole Anthony was playing very, very well, got hurt. You need these young guys to stay healthy. Wendell Carter, injury problems. If they can stay healthy and use their draft picks correctly, Orlando, most people aren't going to agree, but Orlando is a big market. No state income tax.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing in Central Florida.
Yeah.
You're playing in an area that is, you know, hustling and bustling all the time. It's a good area to live in. They can attract a big name player, whether it be through free agency or through a trade, with all the assets they have.
Well, Chris, you were a kid, remember? Remember how crazy the town was when Shaquille O'Neal and Anthony Hardaway were here?
Yeah. When Penny Hardaway and Shaq were here, it was huge. When Dwight Howard, you know, you had Dwight Howard, Jameer Nelson, Hedo Turkoglu, Rashard Lewis, when they went right to the finals that year.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's going to be a slow burn, though. Do I think Steve Clifford's the guy to pilot them in the direction this year and next year? Yes. But Steve Clifford, in my opinion, is not the guy to tie the bow and go, all right, now we're going to make our way into the playoffs, second, third, Eastern Conference Finals. I think they need to look in the direction of, you know, someone who's proven to take an up-and-coming nucleus, add a couple pieces to it, and then make your play into the final. You know, the perfect person is someone who's already been there. It's Doc Rivers. But you're not going to get Doc Rivers out of an organization who's going to be a perennial title threat year after year. Mm-hmm. I don't know who the right coach would be. I think Steve Clifford can keep them on the right path, but I think he's not the guy to finish this rebuild off with. But yeah, it's going to be a slow burn. Magic fans, you got a bright future. You just got to be patient, which I don't think is asking much because y'all have been patient for the last however long Dwight Howard hasn't been there.
Yeah, so. I think as a Rockets fan, I can kind of empathize with where the Magic are right now because we're both very much in the same boat with what we're looking to do. And we both did a quick, not a quick rebuild, but a quick core rebuild done well and done in a hurry, almost overnight. Now, the Rockets chose to go with a young head coach that's been an incredible assistant for his career but has never gotten a shot as a head coach in Silas. Now, it's way too early to say if it's right or wrong. I wonder if Orlando looks at that, goes to find that next under 40 assistant coach that's been an assistant coach for 10 years. Everybody loves him. Nobody in the league has a bad thing to say about him, and they give him his first shot. You know, who knows that the Magic go that way? The Magic might think Clifford is their guy for the next 5 or 6 years. Unsure that way too, but I think the Magic and the Rockets are very much in the same boat right now.
I think someone who would actually probably be perfect for what they're trying to do is someone who's coached before but has kind of blossomed lately as an assistant coach. I think that's Jason Kidd. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, him sitting under the tutelage in L.A., I think you put him there with young point guards, Cole Anthony, Markel Fultz. People will forget, Markel Fultz is still young.
Yeah.
I think you put him there with that young core and what he's learned over the years and what he did wrong in Milwaukee and in Brooklyn. I think he could be the right guy for them. But they could, you know, they could keep Clifford. They could go with a different route. But I think Jason Kidd would be somebody to look at if you're Orlando to try to, you know, push this forward.
Yeah, it looks like the Magic signed Clifford to a 4-year deal in 2018. Mm-hmm. So Clifford's deal is coming up. I don't believe that they have extended him.
Yeah.
So that 4-year deal is on its way out, and not shocked if they don't re-up and look to go a different way.
And usually with coaching like contracts, yeah, if you're not extended, yeah, if, you know, this close to the end, you're probably not coming back.
Yeah, I mean, a guy like a Jason Kidd, like you said, you know, if they really want to blow it up and they really want to go a whole new route, do they call Becky Hammon and just offer her just to test, just to take a temperature, just to see where they are, you know, or do they go get, you know, a grizzled old vet, a defensive minded guy like Tibbs to build on the defensive side of the ball and kind of work your way out from there? You know, I don't know.
I see your Becky Hammon. What about Tim Duncan? Tim Duncan is also a guy who sat under Pop. Could come in there, defensively minded, fundamentally sound. Yeah. Maybe that's what the young kids need, especially with Wendell Carter now and Mo Bamba. Could Tim Duncan be the head coach that gets the best out of it?
Man, who knows? I don't know.
Be interesting to see, wouldn't it? Guys, now that the trade deadline has come and gone, I said it was upon us, and it has been, but the world champions didn't do a whole lot of anything, as a matter of fact. But now you've got two potential possibilities out there in the free agent market for them, LaMarcus Aldridge and Andre Drummond. What do you think?
This is why we cover the sports and you work. Yep. LaMarcus Aldridge is a Brooklyn Nets, and Andre Drummond is a Laker. So this has already happened.
It's already happened?
So that's already happened. Yeah.
Okay. I did not realize that. I was exceedingly busy today at work. Yeah. So Drummond did go to LA. I knew that was a rumbling to do so. Good. I'm glad that's exactly what I thought would occur.
The Nets load up, and which is hilarious that everybody is coming out with like, oh, the Nets are just making great moves, great basketball moves to try and get over the hump. Good for them. You know, which is not what other teams or players have been met with in free agency or trade deadline periods, we'll say. As somebody who wants to go win a ring, duh. Yeah, you go get Blake Griffin on a short contract and you go get a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge to round out, because there's no reason that DeAndre Jordan should be your starting center if you're trying to win a title. Sorry, DeAndre. But you get a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge, then you can rotate LaMarcus, Blake, and DeAndre. Good four fives to rotate on. So I do like that from them. But Andre Drummond going to the Lakers, man. Wow. Your front court is now Drummond, Anthony Davis, and LeBron James. And I don't know why we're not talking about that more. Because for most of everybody's money, Andre Drummond is the second best center in the league behind Nikola Jokic?
Probably third behind Embiid.
Okay, so third. Okay, yeah, so third. So it's Jokic, Embiid, and then most likely Drummond. I don't know how he drops below four, if you want to throw somebody in at the three slot. But he's a top five center who's very good at what he does still. He's a high caliber center that just didn't get talked about a lot because he was stuck in Cleveland. And, and before that, he was stuck in Detroit.
And, you know, he sat out the last 17 games. They came out and they made the decision that we're not going to play him until we find a trade partner, which we can go into why that is messed up and wrong on so many levels, but we won't. But, I mean, it's not like the guy's having a down year. He's averaging 17.5 and 13.5. I mean, I'm scrolling through his basketball reference page right now. Sorry, shoot me. I haven't watched many Cavaliers games this year.
You know, 23-14, 26-19, 33-16, a lot of mid-20s and 10s. You know, he's had a bunch of good games this year. He's going to get you defense. Well, defensive, we really haven't seen him on a winning team, so we don't know if the defense is going to be there in crunch time in big games. He's athletic enough. I think he'll be fine, especially playing next to Anthony Davis and LeBron James.
Yeah.
You're not going to get a rebound from the Lakers. You have two of the best rebounders in the league in Davis and Drummond. You're not going to be able to bully inside because you have LeBron, AD, and Drummond. I think people aren't talking about this enough because they're saying, oh, well, the Lakers needed a wing. They needed a ball-playing guard, blah, blah, blah. They needed someone like Kyle Lowry. No, the Lakers just need to be healthy. When LeBron comes back and AD comes back, they will be fine.
Yeah. And you know what? Drummond is going to give them a nice impact in the area they need it right now because they're ranked 9th in rebounds in the NBA and 17th in offensive boards. And that's going to be a significant increase with Drummond in there for them. It really helped them in those two areas they need it. Yes, they're very injured right now, but you know, this pickup for them is going to be terrific.
Well, yeah. And also going back to like the Brooklyn point, DeAndre Jordan is now their backup center, which is a good place to be in. And the Lakers' backup center is now Marc Gasol, which is also a good place to be in.
Sure.
Yeah. And like you were saying, Pops, Drummond's averaging almost 5 offensive boards a game this year. When you look at a lineup that in crunch time, in the playoffs, in the finals, can be Schroeder at the 1, Wesley Matthews or KCP at the 2, and then you got LeBron, AD, and Drummond, you're going to be hard-pressed to find a better 5 to play against. And what KCP did in the finals last year, if he turns up and does that and Schroeder just continues to play, you know, ferociously on both sides of the ball, someone we're not talking about, Montrezl Harrell. He's going to be coming off the bench. Yeah. So the depth is there. I think this is the biggest move that people won't agree with because they have a bias against the Lakers and what LeBron James has done over his career. Like Cam was saying, everyone's saying that Brooklyn's doing great and the moves are great and this is phenomenal. But then Drummond goes to Lakers and, oh, LeBron needs more help. Oh, trying to make a super team. The same when, KD's over there just grabbing up everybody. But I think, Drummond to the Lakers is going to be big. Like I said, we haven't seen him on a winning team. He's played in Detroit. He's played, a little bit in Cleveland now. It's going to be interesting. I think he's a great fit. If, of course, you just stick another dominant big man next to Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis doesn't have to play the 5, which he doesn't like doing, even though if need be, he can. I think this is big for him.
Yeah, I wish a guy like Montrezl Harrell had more diversity out on the wing because, and again, I mean, I know he doesn't have, this is just kind of nitpicking. This really isn't here or there, but if a guy like Montrezl had more work at the small forward position, now you're looking at Schroeder, LeBron, Harrell, AD, and Drummond as your 5 to end the game with. Mm-hmm. And I know you're not going to get there, but just having Montrezl Harrell and Marc Gasol off the bench is a championship winning a formula there.
Yeah. And I'm, you got, oh, sorry.
Go I'm ahead, so, that's all right. I am so glad this occurred because I've been so engulfed in work that I did not know this had gone down. I heard the rumblings of it and did not get to follow up on it. He was averaging 17.5 points, 13.5 rebounds, and 2.5 assists for Cleveland.
And this makes sense, too, because he gets out of Cleveland. Cleveland now can lock down Jared Allen, who's going to be their next center.
That's who they want to have.
And Andre Drummond gets a chance to get out of Detroit and Cleveland, which has been his last two stops, get into the limelight, go play with a winning team, and figure out what he looks like when the lights are the brightest on him. And the lights shine nowhere brighter in the NBA than in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and, people look at his field goal and say, all right, he's shooting 47%, but that's in Cleveland. When the ball goes in the low post, everybody's going to swarm him because that's it. It's him. He doesn't have a power forward on the other side of him, with all respect to Larry Nance. He doesn't have a power forward on the other side of him that he can dish the ball to or demands respect down in the low block. I think with Anthony Davis, I think you're going to see that field goal percentage rise above his career average, which is 54%. I think he's going to be pushing the 56 to 58%. He's a 60% free throw shooter from the line, which isn't great, isn't terrible. I think LeBron's hovering right around, you know, 64-65%. But awful. I think when it matters, it's not going to matter on who's shooting free throws and who's not. If this Lakers team can get back healthy and get clicking with Andre Drummond as the addition, yeah, Brooklyn's adding Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge, but they haven't been good for the past 4 years. So,
and Brooklyn still has to get out of the East. I mean, both of these teams still have to get out of their conference, but Brooklyn still has to show they can get out of the East.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I think they're loaded now. Still have to go do it.
Yeah. But when the lights are the brightest, will the top three of Kyrie, KD, and, you know, Harden's already proved that he will, but will Kyrie, you know, he's known to be a little bit of a, you know, crybaby. Is he going to... You know, the cohesion. Will it be there in the Western or Eastern Conference Finals?
You're just mad he's a flat Earth guy. That's all.
I'm just mad that he's got all this potential and he's turned into the Antonio Brown of the NBA.
Yeah. Oh, I got to take a break.
I think that's a good point. You know, when they're down 2-1 in the second round, what's that look like between being, you know, sweeping 4-1? You know, the Knicks or the Hornets in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, if Harden has 23 shots, Durant has 30, and Kyrie has 7, right, and they're down in a series, is he going to say, I'm going to start shooting the ball, and then you're going to see Harden and KD's efficiency go down? I think you play through Harden and Kevin. I think Kyrie needs to take the third seat on the bus instead of being, you know, he was complaining about being the second man in Cleveland, goes to Boston, can't do it on his own. Goes to Brooklyn, goes, all right, I got Kevin Durant. I'm still the second guy. And now he's the third guy. So I think he needs to take a back seat. I think he needs to be more of a playmaking, you know, spot up shooter. And he's got to penetrate. He's one of the best finishers at the rim in the league, but he can't be your focus on offense. It has to be KD and Harden, which is just still stupid to even talk about that all five of these guys are on the same team.
Oh, well, how sad is it? Just added LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah, how sad is it you got to come back to a very, very basic point that you got to be a better teammate? It's sad when I mean, these athletes that are just so tremendous at what they do, but because they're so absorbed with their own performance, their own value to the team, they tend to forget the team.
Sure, which, by the way, haven't heard a lot out of Antonio Brown's mouth lately, but the other two receivers in Pittsburgh have been firing away. Moving along.
All right, let's get to the NCAA Sweet 16, guys. We had some great games, some great finishes. Last night I caught the end of, who was it who hit that shot right at the end of the game to tie it?
UCLA.
And they lost in overtime.
It was the UCLA-Alabama game.
UCLA-Alabama.
Yeah, Alabama.
What a great set play at the end, where they ran and got that clear look on the three-pointer, tied the game up.
Yeah.
Just UCLA too much for them yesterday. Wins by 10, so they're in the Elite Eight. I wanted to stay up and watch that Oregon-USC game. Oh, I didn't get to see any of it.
How bad was the defense there, though, by UCLA at the end of the game? Oh, that defense was awful. They deserved that shot to get hit in their face.
It was awful. It was. They just kind of stood back and watched. It just didn't make sense to me. But we got some good games tonight, but let's get to what happened. Okay. Mm-hmm. In the Sweet 16, Oregon State beat Loyola, Illinois, 65-58. Villanova. Good run.
Oregon State Loyola set college basketball back about 5 years.
Say why?
Did we watch the first half of that game?
No, I was not able to.
It was terrible. Both teams were sub 30%. And I think with 3 minutes left in the first half, a team finally breached 22 points.
I'm not, you know, exaggerating here. Me and Cam have coached better JV basketball games than what happened in that first half.
It was really bad. They just set college basketball back. And thankfully, the second half picked up a little bit and it became respectable. But man, That was the hardest first half to watch of NCAA tournament. Both men's
kind of
and
surprising
women's.
For
this
you
was
guys?
The hardest first half to watch.
You think it was a surprise to you?
Both teams are known for their defense, so I can understand if it was a defensive battle, but it wasn't. both teams were just missing shots and putting up ugly shots, ball going off the foot. It was rough play, man. It was rough play for a half, but they brought it back around in the second half. But kind of shocked Loyola went home.
How about Baylor Villanova, guys? We expected this finish with Baylor coming out on top, but Villanova, nice run missing one of their primary players. They did a good job in the tournament this year, down a man. I mean, that Jay Wright is a heck of a coach. He always brings his boys to play.
Chris?
I mean, Villanova is always one of those teams you got to worry about when it comes to, you know, the tournament with what Jay Wright's done there. But yeah, this Baylor team is continuing to prove why the hype is real with them.
Absolutely. I think, and I was talking to our, you know, owner of Shooting the Sports Ish, Tony, founder, creator, massive Baylor fan, lives in Texas, huge Baylor fan. And we were talking during the game. And when you talk about matchups and you talk about them on the court, people forget that Jay Wright is just a massive mismatch for certain coaches, because he will just take you to task in the middle of a game if you don't know what you're doing. And that's not to say that Coach Scott is a bad coach on the Baylor side. That's not what I'm saying. It's just like Jay's just such a bad matchup with what he's able to do. And he's able to just take the thing that you do away from you. Unfortunately, he doesn't have the horses that Baylor does. At the end of the day, that roster, they're going to play shutdown defense and they're going to get enough buckets on the other end. And that's exactly what they did. But Jay Wright made their life miserable for about 36 of those 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm. It's been known to do that. Yeah. Guys, then the Oral Roberts Arkansas game. That was a good finish as well. Did you see the finish of that?
Did. That was crazy.
Oral Roberts had a chance there at the end. Got off a not so bad shot. Got a decent look. Not great. Was contested shot, but holy moly, Oral Roberts, what a heck of a run at a 15 seed this year.
Oh, absolutely. I can't say more about him than that. I mean, it was awesome to see what they were able to do and make that run. This Arkansas team, I think, was overlooked by a lot of people at the start of the tournament. But, you know, they've been able to do just enough to get by. So, yeah, absolutely.
Got a lot of old Southwest Conference guys here that are moving on. Baylor, I believe, is old Southwest Conference. Arkansas. Next up, Houston-Syracuse. I think Houston was old Southwest Conference, were they not?
I believe so.
I wasn't around then, so
I believe
know.
So, yeah. And Houston takes out Syracuse in pretty strong fashion.
Yeah, this Houston team, again, was one of those teams that had a lot of hype coming in the tournament. There were questions around them. Can they get it done when the lights are the brightest? Syracuse has been playing well. I still want the NCAA to look into Buddy Boeheim's recruiting. I think there has been some sort of money and or housing and or
tampering.
Food tampering of some sort.
You think so?
But, you know, Syracuse, again, Jim Boeheim, another coach, like we've touched on it many times, you don't want to see across from you when you have to draw something up. But Houston came out and showed why, you know, hey, this isn't hype. This is, you know, this is legit. We're going to make this run.
Yeah, I've been super bullish on this Houston team all year. Just having the ability to watch them in the conference that I follow the second most out of any of the conferences. Really just enjoy this Houston squad and what they're able to do. Their ways to attack out in transition. And that's kind of the thing with the 2-3 with Boeheim is if it hits, you're going to make their life miserable. But if it misses, it goes south. Pretty quickly. So this one was a miss for the Syracuse defense tonight, and that they went south really quickly against this Houston squad, which I think has a chance to make it to the Final Four.
And, you know, we're talking about this Houston squad. They're playing right now against Oregon State. They're up 17 at half.
Wow.
It's 34-17 right now.
Yeah, against an Oregon State team that is known for their defense. That's how they made it here. And a fun note for Houston, their trip to a Final Four has been 15, 10, 11, and 12 is the seedings. So they can only play who gets put in front of them. They can only do that. True. They don't get a chance to rewrite it. But favorable is a word I think a lot of us would use.
Certainly. Their bracket was very favorable for them. Guys, I don't think we were surprised at all with Gonzaga knocking Creighton out fairly short order.
Yeah.
I mean, enough said about Gonzaga. They're the cream of the crop, but Cam, what you got on it?
Holy crap. man, this Gonzaga team is really good. Yeah. And they're just there was a stat of the five starters for Gonzaga, four of them finished in the top five of their position at the end of the year. This team is just loaded around the table. I mean, it doesn't matter which spot you go to. They're loaded at the starting position, and they're deep. And they're deep with people that have been there and guys that have minutes under their belt, that have a little bit of tread on the tires, like Coach said earlier. Everybody's talking about this USC team. If Gonzaga beats this USC team by like 17, I think everybody's going to lose their mind. And I think it's going to happen.
Because Gonzaga, everybody's saying USC is the hottest team in the tournament right now. 100%. Gonzaga hasn't lost this year, guys. Don't forget that. So Gonzaga maintains their heat. But USC right now is playing great ball. Does USC have the ability to beat Gonzaga on one of those Villanova-Georgetown nights where Villanova shot 88% and played a perfect game? Yes, they have the potential to do it. Mm-hmm. But it's going to have to be a damn near perfect game. The Mobley boys, they're great.
Yeah,
I agreed, and I think Big Mobley is going to be the best big that Gonzaga has seen all year. Maybe not from a flash standpoint of like he's averaging 30 and 18 kind of big, but just from somebody that can just get moved around. He can funnel to the basket from any position inside the 3-point line. He always finds his way around the rim. He can scrap for boards. He can scrap for putbacks. He's going to be the biggest target for this Gonzaga team so far in this tournament, I think.
Yep, this will be a big game for them. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, Gonzaga just continually proves why they've been the best team from start to finish this year. It's looking more and more likely that every game that goes by that they're going to, what a lot of people predicted, walk through everybody and get to the finals. And whoever they face in the finals is going to be have that tall task to beat them. They look great. They've looked great all tournament. They haven't looked like they've been in any sort of danger. Everything's been hitting. Everything's been clicking.
You know, that is one game tomorrow night I'm going to make sure that I don't have any work to do to be able to watch, is that USC Gonzaga game tomorrow night at 7:15 p.m. But Gonzaga, guys, we know. Cream of the crop. They're the team to beat. But USC, nobody can sleep on USC.
And, we say that, but we went – Oregon last night went for a spell where we missed 12 of 13 straight shots.
Yeah.
We did not play good. We did not play good at all. No. Gonzaga is not going to do that. That's the difference between where Oregon are and where they want to be. They want to be where Gonzaga's at. Gonzaga's not going to go on a stretch like that where they're missing buckets.
Mm-hmm. But look at what the Pac-12 has done in basketball this year in the tournament. I mean, they have looked fantastic. They have been one of the top one or two, arguably interchangeable, conferences in the tournament this year.
Mm-hmm.
100%. You can't argue against that.
Absolutely. All right, next up. Let's go back. We were talking a lot about USC. How about that Oregon game? Let's go. Like Chris said, there was a cold stretch in there for Oregon, but it started out, the game was as anticipated, I thought, from the start. It deteriorated down the line for Oregon, but I think that had Oregon shot a little better, you never know how this would have turned out.
Yeah, I agree. I think, we were talking about it beforehand, Chris and I, this was the Pac-12 title game that never happened this year.
True.
You know, this is a feud, a rivalry that spans across all sports that happened in the middle of the Sweet 16, which for a fan's perspective is awesome. Mm-hmm. You give me a blood rivalry like this in the middle of a national tournament, like I am in. And you saw it on the court. There is no love lost between these two teams for any reason. And you saw a lot of it out there. You know, USC got out there hot. I had Oregon. I thought Oregon was going to be able to put them away. USC did everything they needed to do. And man, we talked about it going into this. If the Mobley brothers got hot, they could make a run. And boy, howdy have they.
Yeah.
Well, they finally beat us at something over the past couple of years. So
hey, let's go.
Hey. All right, guys, let's look back at Michigan, Florida State. I thought Florida State would make a little better showing themselves, but Michigan really asserted themselves.
Like I said, coming into this, I've been high on Michigan, and I mean, Florida State's a good team, damn good team, coached well, drilled well, play well. They've beaten a very good LSU team and a good Florida State team. I think people are not talking about Michigan as enough as they should be. I think all the hype is around, you know, Gonzaga, as it should be, Houston and Baylor. Michigan just quietly doing their job, getting everything done, and I think they're okay with being that, you know, overlooked squad right now, even as a one seed.
Oddly enough, the most overlooked one seed, you know, that we've had in a while, I think. I know you guys are coming at it from the defensive aspect of Michigan, and I appreciate that. Florida State just laid an egg.
Yeah,
like, I don't know any other way around it than Florida State just laid an egg. Like, you lose by 18 at this time in the season. Like, you just did not have a good night, and they really didn't. They did not at all have a good night. Michigan goes 50% from the field. Florida State goes 40%. Florida State, 5 of 20 from 3. They only had two players in double digits. Michigan had four.
Yeah.
Just Florida State just laid an egg, man. I don't know any other way around it, but, you know, Michigan's very good at basketball.
Yeah. And we touched on it earlier, fellas. That was a really good game between Alabama and UCLA. And Alabama, I mean, UCLA, remember, a play-in game at 11. And now, again, another Pac-12 team.
Yeah.
Had the lead late. Made a great play to get up by three, and then Alabama ran a tremendous play with a lackluster defense by UCLA there at the end to give them a clear open look, and the kid just buried it. But they really overwhelmed him in the overtime, winning by 10.
Yeah, you know, Alabama's one of Alabama's best players goes out in foul trouble late in the second half. So he sits through the rest of the game. They hit that buzzer beater three, which UCLA absolutely deserved to have it in their face because it was terrible defense. Mm-hmm. But you can't go back to your main starter in the overtime because you don't have him anymore. And I think that's where Alabama kind of fell short. For UCLA, in a word, balanced. All five players in double digits. Their lowest score was 10. They had two guys at 17. Just balance across the board, played an incredible game, did exactly what they needed to do, and came out with the win.
Yeah, we're looking very, very good going into this next round. All right, what we got coming up, fellas? Here are the eight games to come up. Elite Eight games. We got some ongoing right now. Oregon State, Houston. Chris, you said it was a 17-point lead by Houston at half?
Yep.
Yeah,
then we got Houston after that
this game.
Arkansas, Baylor coming up next.
It's going to be a good game.
The run and gun of Arkansas, I think, will give Baylor a little bit of fit early. But Arkansas is going to have a – I mean, Arkansas is going to have to shoot 40% from three as a team tonight to have a shot. Now, the good news is Arkansas can do that. You know, they don't get to be a three seed and have the run that they had in the regular season without being able to pull off a couple of those games. But Baylor defensively, I think they end up being too good. Arkansas makes a little bit of a run, but I think Baylor puts it away late with free throws.
Yep. I agree with that.
All right, tomorrow. I'm telling you, the hot game tomorrow. We already said it. Gonzaga USC. Must see TV there. Gotta see that. Then right after that is a game not to sneeze at. You got UCLA Michigan. Guys, who do you like in USC Gonzaga?
Yeah. I have Gonzaga. I like I said, Oregon last night did not play well. They did not play well at all. USC is a good team. Again, the Mobley brothers, more so Evan, is going to need a very big game here. But I just think Gonzaga is so damn good right now and have been all year. I think it's going to be pretty easy for them. I would not be surprised if this was a 10, 12, 14-point game.
Yeah, I completely agree with Chris. We talked about before when we did our bracket. I know that I mentioned it. In a season like this, it is hard not, it's hard to overlook the teams that have been the best teams in the country from tip to buzzer this season. That's been Baylor and that's been Gonzaga. Those two have been, you know, Illinois got hot, Michigan went on a run, but the two best teams from tip to buzzer the whole year, night in and night out, have been Gonzaga and have been Baylor. And Baylor was able to do that with almost a month off because of their COVID problems that they had. They still came back and are doing what they're doing at a high level, which is insane.
Yeah. After I recall correctly, Cam, weren't they 18-0 at the time? They stumbled in two games and then just took right off again because of the COVID break.
Absolutely. I've got Gonzaga winning. I have them winning between 15 and 20. This is the first, I guess, statement game that they need to have. You know, one could say that beating, you know, winning the way they did in the Sweet 16 would probably be statement enough, but I think they followed up and do it again. I think this is another 15 to 20 point win for Gonzaga.
Yep. All right, guys, UCLA, Michigan, we got an 11-1, but I really don't look at UCLA the way they're playing now as an 11 seed, even though the seeding this year, I think, was a little more loose than it's been. Not that it wasn't accurate. It was based on regular season, but so much is going on this regular season. We got an 11-1 here. This could be a good game.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like I said, I'm very bullish on Michigan. What Juwan Howard is doing there is phenomenal. He's putting that Fab Five mentality into this squad. UCLA, and the one play that will stick out to me is the terrible defense that Alabama hit that three. That, I think, is going to have a bigger play in their future than a lot of people think. They turned off there. They were not on. They have to be on playing Michigan. They have to play tight defense all night. Can they do it? That's the biggest question.
Chris,
I still have Michigan going through.
You are still alive right now, Chris, and you could punch your ticket to a perfect Final Four with Gonzaga, Michigan, Baylor, and Oklahoma State. Okie State is out. Yep. Yeah. And I, likewise, that's my Final Four. I have Oklahoma State out now. So, yeah, I overlooked it, read it too quickly thing. It was Oregon State, Oklahoma State, vice versa. But, Cam, how's your Final Four looking? You projected to be right there again?
I don't even remember who I have. It's not in front of me right now. Sorry. I really like Michigan here. I think UCLA's had a good run, but I'm with Chris. And if this says anything, the run that USC's on and the run that UCLA is on, Gonzaga opened as a 10-point favorite and Michigan opened as an 8-point favorite. So they're hot and they're on their runs, but they're about to run up against two very, very good teams. I like both Gonzaga and Michigan to cover, and I think both of them win bigger than people think.
And it's funny because we were all talking about how crazy this year was. Don't be surprised if you see Cinderella runs. We have, but we're most likely going to get 3-1s and a 2 in the Final Four, which rarely ever happens.
Yes, absolutely. I completely agree with that. It's crazy that the year nobody wanted the chalk year, you know, is the year that it happens, which is crazy.
Yep.
All right, guys, let's transition.
I had Gonzaga.
Gonzaga, you're good there?
Baylor, Oklahoma State, and Texas.
Okay. All right, but that's all right. Each of us had that one team that's out, so we're all three in the Final Four if games go the way it's supposed to.
Shaka Smart leaving Texas, heading to Marquette.
Heading to Marquette. Way to go, Keegan.
And I said – to Cam when this happened, I said that's an upgrade for Shaka Smart in my opinion.
I think it gets Shaka out of the big limelight of Texas. I think he gets back to his roots where he was before. And I kind of like Shaka going back to a smaller school in Marquette, which it is from Texas anyways, and getting back to kind of his roots.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Who is the Chris Beard, the Texas Tech coach right now?
Yes.
Rumblings that he may step across the state to take over that Texas job.
If he does that, he might be shot.
You think?
I don't know the rivalry between Texas Tech and Texas. The only thing I remember was Michael Crabtree's sideline catch and going into the end zone those many years ago in that rivalry game. I don't think it's been much of a rivalry over the past years in football because Texas Tech has just been better. I don't know if that rivalry is there in basketball, but boy, that's a Benedict Arnold move if I've ever seen one. It's like, that'd be like Coach K going, yeah, I'm done at Duke. I think I'm going to go to North Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. All right, guys, let's real quick get out of the basketball and finish up here with what went on with the Miami Dolphins being the Wizards. Or Cam, what you got?
Another coaching thing that happened in college basketball. Mike Woodson leaving the NBA and headed to Indiana. I think this is an awesome hire for Indiana.
Good for
him. They have a guy back there who played and is, you know, bleeds everything there and is ready to go and bring him back. He's a little bit older, which some people are knocking, which anyways.
Stupid.
But he's got all the ties you would ever need a head coach to have. To the next level, and everybody he's made friends with in college along the way. He's a guy that's done it at every level. He's got all the ties you could ever want. And more importantly, he thoroughly loves, not likes or enjoys, but he loves where he's going. Yeah. To his core, he loves where he's going to coach. And I think those three things, you can't ask for anything more than that.
He doesn't throw chairs, does he?
Congratulations. I think it was a good hire. He has not thrown a chair to our knowledge.
I am a big Mike Woodson believer. Yeah. I like him very much. I think he got the shaft in the NBA, if we're being honest. He was the coach of the last good Knicks teams with Carmelo, and then was swiftly blamed for the bad Knicks teams, which you might want to look upstairs for that.
Been a lot of those, yeah.
But I think this is a great hire for Indiana, and I'm telling you, and you can clip this, and if I'm wrong in 5 years, so be it, but I think we're going to about to see the resurgence of Indiana basketball. I think he's going to get them back on track.
He's a guy who can do it.
I think you now have a guy that can walk into the living room of a Mr. Basketball Indiana and garner his attention.
Yeah.
And they haven't been able to do that for a while with the last few coaches that Indiana has gone through. But a guy like Mike Woodson can command the attention of now Mr. Basketball in Indiana.
And I love how people are knocking his age. He's 63.
Yeah.
Big deal.
If I'm not mistaken, and I could be wrong here, didn't the Chicago White Sox, who did they hire as their new manager in the MLB? Tony La Russa? Isn't he almost pushing, I don't know, 90?
No, I mean, let's just look at Coach K and Roy Williams. You don't have to leave college basketball.
Yeah. It should have nothing to do with age. No. Mike Woodson, in my opinion, very good coach. And he's 63.
Very good coach.
Oh, no.
When was the last time, guys? I don't think you can ever remember when the women's basketball team in Indiana was getting more shine than the men's team. But it's happening now.
Absolutely.
It's been a long time.
I don't think it ever has been.
I don't believe that it ever has either.
They need to bring back the pinstripes, the red and white pinstripes. They need to go all old school.
Listen, that Indiana women's basketball team is no joke. And what they're being able to do right now is awesome. And they've got Arizona coming up. That's a good squad. That's a good squad there.
Knocked out a good NC State team.
Yeah, absolutely. They did a number one seed NC State team.
Yep. Yeah. All right, guys, we'll end up here with the Miami Dolphins. A lot of people at first, they had pulled off a couple moves. Folks were kind of questioning them. They kind of sent the NFL draft into a tailspin to start with, sending the third pick to San Francisco for the number 12 pick, which then the Dolphins then traded to the Philadelphia Eagles. As a result, the Dolphins finished up with the number 6 pick in this year's draft and multiple first-round picks. As part of this, Miami also has the number 18 pick in this year's draft.
Yeah.
And the Eagles, I think, if you want to say lose, were the losers in this three-team scenario here. But, Miami is wheeling and dealing, and they have got a lot of draft capital.
So what you're trying to tell me is Philly comes out the losers once again because Jeffrey Lurie is an idiot.
I didn't say that.
That's one way somebody will put it. I'm going to let Chris dig a little bit deeper into this, but pretty much here's what I gather. The Miami Dolphins front office put on a clinic, a masterclass of how to work a draft. Now, it's not as masterful as Kevin Costner in Draft Day, but nothing.
I was just going to ask you that. Is it that good?
It's not that good. Nothing's that good. Kevin Costner is a genius when it comes to that.
And who did he fleece? The Seattle Seahawks.
The Seattle Seahawks, yeah. But he got David Putney, so that's all that matters.
He did get Putney. There you go.
Okay. So the Dolphins did an incredible masterclass of the draft. San Francisco now puts themselves in prime position for a position they believe that they need and need to fill quickly. And Philly, while people will consider them the loser, if I can be positive here for a second,
right?
They get capital back and they believe in Jalen Hurts. And they feel like the Jalen Hurts is the guy, so they can move down a couple spots and go find him a wide receiver or an offensive target like a Pitts or like a Waddle or something like that to bring into Philly and start putting a team around him. Yep. That's Philly a positive spin. Feel free.
Well, Philly got the 12, the 123, and a 2022 first-round pick for the 6.
Yeah.
And number 156 in this year.
Oh, one more thing. The Miami Dolphins, before the second half of this started, the Miami Dolphins turned Laremy Tunsil into 3 number ones and 4 number twos.
Yep.
That is amazing. Tunsil's a solid player, but holy moly.
And somebody put up a picture of the Dolphins having a statue of Laremy Tunsil out in their front of their stadium because of all of his contributions. And he reposted it and said, look, I love it. I love it. Yeah. So, but you look at this, San Francisco moves up to 3, presumably taking a quarterback, even though all things said, Jimmy Garoppolo is their guy this year. That's what they're sticking to it. He's not going anywhere. They did preface that by saying this year. I think that tips the hand on who they're taking at 3. Mark it down, Trey Lance.
Rumble and say Mac Jones.
No, they'd be absolutely the many words I will not say right now to but take Mac Jones at 3.
Shanahan likes that type of quarterback that fits in a system that he has.
And he's also an idiot. So Trey Lance at number 3 because Jimmy Garoppolo will get.
All right. Do you think they take Lance over Justin Fields? Do you think Fields is the one that slides?
I will go to the grave and saying Justin Fields is by far and away the 4th best quarterback in this draft. And 1 and 2 are up here. And I think Trey Lance is even ahead of him by a lot of margin. Justin Fields, to me, decision-making, not there yet. A little slow for what you like. Also, Ohio State quarterback. Name me one Ohio State quarterback that has done anything in the NFL in the past.
Not in a long, long time.
If people are going to knock Trey Lance for playing in the FCS, you better knock Justin Fields for playing at Ohio State. Ohio State quarterbacks do not mix when it comes to the NFL. I think Trey Lance is the right pick here. He's a big, strong kid, very, you know, reminiscent of Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
He's going to take care of the ball. He's mobile. He is perfect for a West Coast vibe out in San Fran. He's a good poster boy to have. And Jimmy Garoppolo, he comes in the year as a starter. If he sucks majorly by week 4, all right, Trey Lance, now's your time. If not, and he can get you through the year, that gives Trey Lance another year to learn, sit back, learn the offense. You move Garoppolo in the offseason, and Trey Lance takes over. I think the Dolphins fleeced the Eagles here. I think the Eagles are of the mindset that they can get their guy at 12. However, if you ask their fans, Ja'Marr Chase is the guy to get. Big playmaking receiver that they haven't had since very early Alshon Jeffrey. They're probably going to get one of the three of Chase, Waddle, and Smith, whoever falls. And that's like picking a Lambo, Ferrari, and a McLaren. You're getting a stud. Whatever you pick.
At either pick,
And then, you know, the Dolphins move up to 6. Again, your pick of the litter there. You could go for a receiver. You could go for Penei Sewell if he drops. You could go for Micah Parsons. You could pick whatever you want at 6 because you turn around and you have 18. So you're going to get 2 very big impact players on a young team that should have made the playoffs last year. I think we can all agree on that. It all hinges now on Tua. Is Tua good enough? And this is going to be the year because I guarantee you with the first round picks they have next year, they're not going to wait. They are not going to wait. There is too much talent on that team.
Yeah. No, I agree with you, especially with Fitzpatrick being gone. There's no net there for Tua anymore. He has to be the everyday guy, and he has to prove that he can lead a team. I absolutely think he can do it. I think there are a lot of people that believe that he can do it, but now, you know, this year is going to be the year for him to show it.
Yep.
Right. I believe in that too, guys. I don't really think there's a true loser in this because the Eagles did get a lot in exchange, but my God, what the Dolphins have done, and they're young and they're talented.
And B-Flow's got them boys rolling.
Man, I'm telling you what.
It's a masterclass. Yeah. It's an absolute masterclass what they're able to do right now. It's crazy.
Yep.
Yep. They're in such a point of leverage that, my goodness gracious, they can do anything they want.
Before we wrap this up, did you guys see that throw Zach Wilson made at his pro day, rolling to his left, throwing across his body on a line about 75 yards?
Yep.
Yeah.
Some people had the audacity to show Sam Darnold rolling out to his left, throwing a pass about 10 yards across his body to the right for a touchdown week two. I just find that funny because there's a big difference in the two plays.
Let me tell you something about this kid. He's never played a lick of NFL football to this date, but I will say he's better than any BYU quarterback that's ever come out other than Steve Young. He's better than Robbie Bosco. He's better than Ty Detmer. He's better than Jim McMahon. He's better. Steve Young's always got a catch. This kid is an amazing athlete and a great quarterback.
And I was telling Cam, too, you know, he's got this swagger when he walks in the room where I'm the guy. I got this. Whatever you throw at me, I got it. Jump on the back. We're going for a ride. And I love that.
I'm very interested with this quarterback class because I eventually will have to say something on record, which will no doubt backfire in my face in about 3.5 years.
Funny, that's the average length of an NFL career. So that's pretty funny.
There you go, especially from this particular class. I think I'll say it now because we're 1.5 hours in, so whatever. I'm feeling crazy. I believe that Kyle Trask is the second best quarterback in this draft.
Okay. I wouldn't say second. I would say he's the fourth best quarterback in this class.
I don't trust Trey Lance. I think Zach Wilson is good. I don't know if I trust Justin Fields. I think Mac Jones is going to be a steal in the third round for somebody.
I don't think he'll drop that far.
I mean, unless all the quarterbacks just go in the first two rounds, which if that's the case, and it's the Wild West, I'm here for it. I don't really care.
It could be crazy.
What's going to happen is I think the first four picks are going to be quarterback.
That's never happened. The first three have never happened as quarterbacks.
I think you're going to see that.
Because that's what everybody's saying.
And then a mid-round, like 12 to 18, Mac Jones is going to go.
I think Kyle Trask – I just like Kyle. I like what he's been able to do in college. I think
Kyle Trask will be the steal.
Yeah.
I think he will be. I think he's going to end up being the second best quarterback in this draft when we review it in about 5 years, 4.5 years.
I think he'll go late second, early third to, and I think a perfect fit, New Orleans, in the second or third round. You know, is Jameis going to be what you think he is? Is Taysom Hill going to play that fake contract out? We'll find out next episode on Dragon Ball Z. But I think, you know, I think he'll go second, third round, and I think he could be the second best quarterback in this draft. I agree with you. I think Zach Wilson has the chance to be what I think he can be, but I think Kyle Trask, if he falls to the right position, could be the second best quarterback in this draft 5 years down the line.
But again, I step out on that line with a Florida quarterback in the NFL, which they've done so well in history. So, you know. Who knows? But I feel like I also think Trask could, if Trask falls in the second or third round to a team like Washington, I think his starting job could be in jeopardy.
What about to a Seattle who needs somebody? Because I think we only got Russ for one more year.
Yeah, I would love for Houston to grab somebody in the second round when we finally get a pick. Oh no, wait, we don't have a second rounder this year. In the third round when nobody's there and we have to take the guy from North Dakota State that nobody's ever heard of. Just kidding. That's Trey Lance.
Nobody's ever heard of that kid, right?
We're not going to take him. No, we're going to take somebody from like Arkansas State or something.
Hey, you know what? And this could be me again, stepping on a branch. Kellen Mond. Watching his Senior Bowl practice, Kellen Mond has turned me into a big believer in him. I think he could be somebody you're looking at as a steal, you know, day three, day four. Pittsburgh. I feel like Pittsburgh for him, perfect fit.
I mean, let's keep him in Texas. We'll take him in the third round. It'll be fun.
Come from a Jimbo Fisher, Texas A&M school. Jimbo Fisher is the quarterback whisperer of college, allegedly. So, yeah.
He made me a believer.
Mond looked great. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that does it for us. You know, the tail end of it just got to be weird quarterback things that we believe. But soon, we will have kind of a free-for-all in the NFL draft and who we think's kind of going where. We'll look at a couple positions. I don't know if we'll go anything too in-depth, but we'll definitely try and put together a Sports Summit Pod first-round guest list. And see how wrong we are on that, because we're wrong on a lot of things. So we're just going to be wrong on that, too.
I think there's only two sure things in this draft, two. And that's Trevor Lawrence at one and Penei Sewell is the highest drafted lineman. That's all I think is something you can hang your hat on, because the rest of it could be blown up in the first five picks.
Completely agree. We appreciate you guys hanging in there with us. You can follow Shooting the Sports-ish on the scroll below. It says all platforms Shoot Sports-ish. And just above Coach's head, Coach, if you look up, you can find our handle, Sports Summit Pod, on Twitter. And you can go facebook.com/ Sports Summit Pod. And you can find us on Facebook as well. So for that, though, and for us here, I believe that's it. And we're good to go? Yes?
Yes.